We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and last week we discussed appreciation and criticism. We discussed that appreciation is the glue of marriage, and criticism is the destruction of that connection. And that criticism is hurtful, and it doesn't matter how correct a person is, criticism is hurtful. We sometimes think, if I'm right, so what's wrong if I say it? No, find another way to say it. So what's a good other way to say it? One of the things I did when I was your guys' age, not so long ago, I would go to people's houses and observe. I come from one house, so I know how my parents had their relationship. Oh, by the time you start perceiving your parents' relationship, they've already been married at least 15 years. But you go to other people's houses, you start learning. And then when I got engaged, so I asked people questions. And one thing I heard really stuck with me, and I think it's really good advice, but like everything good in life, it requires a little bit of work. It doesn't come easy. And I remember a woman saying, I was a guest at their house for the Shabbos meal, and I said, what tip could you give me? I'm getting married in a month or whatever it was. What tip could you give me? So she said, anytime you think you have something to criticize, think again and find ways to compliment when the other person does it right. If you can strengthen the good, you will achieve the same end, only in a far more pleasant way. And if you think about it, we're all that way. It's not only our wives, we all appreciate it that way. I'll give a funny example, but it's true. Imagine if I'll quote to you from a conversation this morning. Someone asked me to call on their son's behalf to a school the kid was applying to. So in the beginning of the conversation, the principal used terms literally to the effect of, he isn't exactly our cup of tea. And I got really ticked. Like, that's the way you describe a kid? He's a good kid. What are you telling me? He is your cup of tea, isn't your cup of tea? Well, who cares about your cup of tea? 5 minutes into the conversation, you know, I'm listening to him, and then I'm respectfully disagreeing and trying to explain the strengths of this kid. So the principal starts telling me, look, they're barking up the wrong tree. It's in the kid's interest to go to, and he names three other high schools. He says to me, this kid is going to do so well. And he names this high school. And then he names another high school. He says, any one of those two, he'll have a much easier time. He'll be much happier. And if you're already thinking of going our route, so then there's a third high school, which is better than us for this kid. Okay, he won. When you're trying to argue with me and telling me the kid's not good for this place, so then I'll explain to you what I see good in the kid. When you come to me and tell me, well, for the kid, it's in his interest. It's good for him to go to this place, that place, or a third place. Okay, if it's for the kid's benefit, you're talking positive with me, so I'm far more open to listening. I remember as I'm having the conversation, I was asking myself, am I more open to listening to him because he's saying it in a positive way, or because it makes sense to listen to him? But our nature is that when someone speaks positively to us, we're listening. If someone can only switch the conversation from negative to positive. So instead of saying, I wish you would add more salt to the chillin, saying something like, when she does add more salt, boy, this week was really special, this week was really great, what'd you do different? She'll say, really, you liked it? I wasn't sure if I put in the salt, so I put in the salt the second time. And now that I taste it, I realized I put in double the salt. Okay, that's how you like it. Now I know. You find ways to show appreciation. You find ways to get to the same point, but through a positive angle. And it takes thought. The easiest route is to say, you know, I did tell you last week that I prefer the chont with more salt. And that's not right. It's not fair. And if you think about it, much of life is these little things. It sounds babyish. I always say to couples, before we start, I just want to tell you what your argument's going to sound like. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. You did. You did. No, I didn't. I didn't. I didn't. But you did. Okay, so you tell yourself, what are we, 3-year-olds? And the answer is, yes, you are. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. You will see. You will see. You'll be in the middle of an argument with your wife. I asked you to take out the garbage this morning. No, you didn't. You never listen. Yes, I do. You're going to find yourself having these discussions, and suddenly you're going to say, how old are we? But the truth is that if we don't stop and think, so then when we're this close, so then that's natural. That's what happens. So point number one is don't criticize. Point number two, if you want to achieve something, so then try to think of a positive angle to get to the same place. Sometimes it seems impossible. So I'll tell you something which you could do with your kids, and if you're really, really smart, you can find a way to do it in the house with your wife as well. And it achieves the same goal in a very nice and gentle and pleasant way. So let's say you find out that your wife is overcharging the credit card. And before we get involved in this example, I just want us to analyze what really happens when we criticize. There are two really hurtful things that happen when we criticize, maybe three. Number one, what we're telling the other person is, you're wrong. And it's more important for me to tell you that you're wrong than to ensure that you're happy. Meaning, I know it's going to hurt you. And even though we might not have thought about it, but intrinsic in saying you're wrong and you did something wrong is that message, I'm willing to hurt your feelings because that's more important to me. It's more important for me to get the point across than to ensure you're still happy. Now, you'll say, that's not what I meant. But that doesn't matter. That's what's heard. Let's take a small example. You come home from Ma'ariv, and your wife says, boy, you're a speed davener. You get any kavana in that davening?
So you need to think about how to make her happy, right?
Okay. So you can stand there and say, are you my mashgiach? But you're hurt. Now, you know full well that you had zero kavana in that davening. So was she right or wrong? That's not an argument. But what's the feeling? The feeling is, you'll say she's intruding my privacy. It's none of her business. No, what hurts is, why is she... You know, she said something hurtful to me. She said something that... why'd she have to say that? And I gave a small example, but you'll see in life, you'll buy a watch and your wife is going to say, you know, you could have bought it 20 shekels cheaper down the block and you're going to feel like 2 cents. And again, the feeling is, it was more important for you to say that than not to hurt my feelings. So that's point number one. In any type of criticism, there's that intrinsic feeling of, you really didn't care to hurt my feelings. That was more important to you. So that's point number one, which is hurtful in criticism. And if you think about it, it's true between men also. It's not only true between men and women, only between men, usually by the time someone criticizes you, it's really not so important. So it doesn't come up so much. But I know there was a guy here who made it his vendetta to ensure everyone got their tefillin on right. So every morning he'd bounce on someone else and say, you know, you really shouldn't put your tefillin on like that. I'm not sure if you were ever yotzei tefillin in your life, if you've been putting your tefillin on like that. And, you know, he made a lot of friends this way. This was like... Yes, Uri.
Well, I was going to say, 2 points is, A, like, the same exact thing happened between me and my friends. We would get into these arguments, which consist of, yes, I didn't know, you didn't know, you never listened, no, you always do this. And someone came up, and in the middle of conversation... So heated conversation, I start laughing. And then my friend's like, why are you laughing? And I'm like, because we are arguing like an old couple. And the thing is, my question, it comes down to, you know, something to me that's very important is, how do you explain that you were hurt by a comment they made without them getting all defensive? Because then I'll turn around and say, well, the comment you made just hurt me. They're like, well, it's good for you. Well, you should know it. And I'm not trying to hurt you. You should know better than that.
Okay, this is a totally separate class, but I'll address it in 60 seconds. But I'm about to tell you women really don't like that men will know. You want to have that type of conversation with her, you have to have it in her language. What's her language?
You don't say...
You want to have that conversation, you just show her you're hurt. You don't have to say anything. Uri, did I hurt you? Well, I don't want you to feel bad, but whatever. Just think, what would she do in the reverse conversation? You got to express the emotion. Whereas the reason that men will very often be hurt and then find themselves apologizing is because they come back very strongly saying, you know, you hurt my feelings. I'm sorry. You know, they're on the attack. Don't be on the attack. Be on the hurt side. You're not coming to attack.
What happened if it's a guy, though, that need my
credit? That's not for this class. Okay, back to... So we said, intrinsic to any criticism is, you didn't care to hurt my feelings, it was more important for you to criticize. Number two, there's an intrinsic message, there's something wrong with you, and there's no longer the we. In this area, you are the problem. And we'll just mention parenthetically that many husbands make this mistake when it comes to the laws of family purity. They talk about you, the nida. You're the one menstruating. You're the one who's prohibited. It's not you, it's us. It's we who are in a prohibitive state. So a person has to have that sensitivity to talk about things in a way that's kinder and more inclusive.
Are you talking about specifically when it comes to the whole nida issue, or just in general?
So I'm showing an application from the nida issue, but I'm saying that intrinsic to criticism is the idea you are the problem. And in a second, in our example of where she's overcharging the credit card, and we wanted to see an angle of addressing an issue indirectly without hurting her feelings, so we'll see how we circumvent this problem as well. So we said, number one, it's hurtful. It's saying, I don't care to hurt your feelings. That's more important to me to get the point across. Number two, there's a certain distance. I'm saying, you're the problem, not me, and we're separate. It's not us. We'll leave it at those two for now. So, you want to get the point across. This is an idea, again, that involves some thought, but what happens in marriage is that the subjects resurface over and over and over again. It's rare that there's a new issue. Usually, it's the same issues coming up again and again. And that's why sometimes you ask yourself, how am I ever going to resolve this? If this issue keeps coming up, and every time I try to address it, we're not getting anywhere. It still keeps coming up. So one thing you're going to say, sometimes you're going to say, okay, I'm going to have to learn to live with this. This is part of life. This is a difference between us, and fine, we'll make it work. We'll figure out how to make it work. But sometimes you feel like this is a point we have to figure out how to work on. So one way to approach a topic is the same way you would approach the midah if you wanted to develop, to grow yourself. I find that the best way to grow and acquire a good characteristic is to find someone who has it and emulate them. So if you can find someone that you know that keeps a balanced budget and they don't overcharge their credit card, and you come home and you say, you know, I know our neighbor, Jack, he's always so careful and meticulous on ensuring that they don't overspend their salary that month. I wonder what he does right. How could we learn from him? I didn't say she. And hopefully... give me a second. Hopefully the issue isn't so charged that by now she understands I'm talking about her. And very often, by simply expressing appreciation for someone else who gets it right, I've already given a very strong message that the woman is going to try to emulate without telling her anything. Sometimes you say, if I'm going to tell her, if I'm going to wait for a time she gets it right, the house is a royal mess. The floor is so filthy that you can't tell when new filth hits the floor. You know, when am I going to ever have an opportunity to tell her, boy, it's so beautiful, spick and span and clean, only if I do the cleaning and then I've accomplished nothing, right? So sometimes the way to do it is to find someone else who gets it right and learn and find an opportunity to speak about it in a way that's, by the way, you're not talking about her, you're not talking to her, you're discussing someone else. But she will hear that this is something that's important to you. Now, what's so great about this method is that it's non-threatening. I'm not telling her, why aren't you like that? I'm not even discussing her. I'm talking about someone else. I was just at their house, and I saw them sitting over the credit card bills, and Jack told me, yeah, we have the system, and it's been working for us for years, and whatever you find a way to discuss someone else who's gotten it right. You've gotten the same message without all the negativity. Again, this requires brains, and that's your guy's job. But that's enough. It has to be done sensitively, intelligently, in a way that's non-threatening, but it is a very, very powerful tool. It works well with children, too. I mean, it could work well with a roommate. It works well as an educator. This is a phenomenal tool. One of the best ways to get people to be able to see themselves is by talking about someone else. And we find this in the prophet when Nathan, the prophet, comes to rebuke King David. He first tells him a whole allegory. He tells him a whole story. There was a man, he had a sheep, he was a poor person. They had nothing to eat and drink, but they drank the milk of the sheep. At night they'd sleep with the sheep in bed with them to keep them warm. And the sheep was like one of the kids. And then a guest came to the wealthy neighbor. He didn't want to slaughter from his own sheep. So he went over to his poor neighbor and said, give me that. Grabbed the poor man's sheep, slaughtered it to serve his own guests. What does King David say? That man deserves to die. He's going to pay fivefold for that sheep. And David gives it to him. And then what does Nathan tell him? I was talking about you. I wasn't talking about a sheep. But David could see the truth when the Navi's talking about someone else. And we're all that way. So we don't have to end like Nathan. We don't have to come in the end and say, well, I was talking about you, honey, you know. You're going to get nowhere with that. You might get no supper, but you're going to get nowhere further than that. But if you do it intelligently, you can get a point across and help the person work on it. And we're short on time, but I want to end the point of criticism. So we'll take another 5-10 minutes. What happens if you realize, you know, there's something we're really going to have to discuss? This isn't a joke. We could take an example. Let's take a real life example. You find that your wife isn't always telling you the truth. So you ask her if she filled the gas in the car, and she says, yes, she did. So she thought she'd do it in the morning before you get up. She oversleeps. You go out to work, and suddenly you see there's no gas in the car. You're stuck on the side of the road. You're missing your meeting with the CEO. You have to hire a taxi, a tow truck. It's costing you a fortune. But I asked her. Yeah, she meant that. So this is actually an interesting example, because Chazal tell us that when women view things, they view them differently than men. In her mind, if she was going to have it done by the time you got the car, so saying, yes, I filled the gas, was the equivalent of saying you'll have the gas when you need it. Okay, so I'm saying there is an aspect where women in general view things differently than men do. But at the end of the day, you ask her, did you charge anything to the credit card? And she says no, and then turns out that she just did. The Gemara says, if you apply too much pressure in the house, you'll never get a true answer. I don't know about never get a true answer, but you will often get false answers. Because the pressure will cause them to try and say things they think you want to hear. There's a certain pressure is very bad in the house. The Gemara says it's destructive. Even a pious woman under pressure might end up serving her husband food that's not kosher. Under pressure might end up lighting the Shabbos candles after the sunset, because God forbid her husband should come home and see that she didn't light the Shabbos candles. So pressure is a really problematic thing in the home. Even around religious things, especially around religious things, it could be really detrimental. So, okay, but Let's say, you know, you tell your wife, did you make it to the kid's PTA? And she says, yeah, the teacher says everything's fine. And the next morning you get a phone call from the teacher. Why didn't any of you show up to PTA? We got real issues here. So she assumed everything was great. So, you know, what difference does it make? I said, yes, but it's no. And after after a few times like this, you start saying, okay, we got an issue here. How am I dealing with this? So the first thing you should know is that every marriage has real issues. Because we each have real faults. Every one of us. I know you guys might be the exception, but let's just say every one of us usually has real, real faults. I mean, real issues, and usually you're not aware of it until you get married. It only surfaces when you get married. And when you get married, you're still not aware of it. She's aware of yours, and you're aware of hers, and everyone has their blind spots. But every marriage has real issues you have to deal with. So, what do you do? So, what does our common sense say? Let me form a list. Let me come to her and tell her, look, I just collected over the last month how many times you lied to me. You need help. You have a problem. Wrong. Okay? Every step of the way was wrong. What's the right way to go? Let's take another wrong way. What do people classically do? She's clearing the table, and as she's taking the soup, she mistakenly spills the pot of soup on your pants, and you're jumping and scalding hot pants, and as you're running there to wash yourself off, you yell, I can't believe you! You can't carry a pot of soup without pouring it on me, and you're a liar too! She starts telling you, you know, the handles were slippery, and you look at her and say, you liar! You've been lying to me all month! What isn't that classical? Classically, when do we let everything out? When things are already being problematic, so then, boom, now she's going to get it. What'd you gain? You gained nothing. All you did was release all that negative energy. You got nothing. You pushed the marriage back 10 steps. It's going to take you 3 months to bring it back to maybe where you were. No. So, let's learn from the story's mistakes. What's the right way to do it? So the right way to do it is, number one, take everything we've studied until now and ask yourself, is there a positive way in which we can resolve this issue? Is there a way we can address this issue without criticism? And if the answer is no, so then look at it again. If you think, no, there's no way, so stop and think again. The easy way out is criticism. But most of the time, I'd say at least 90% of the time, there are other ways to address it. And you've gotten some tools in what we've been discussing. So stop and think. Don't be quick to criticize. If your goal is to achieve something, if you really want to address an issue, take your time. Think about it. And ask yourself, is this an issue worth addressing? Maybe it's something I can learn to live with. And maybe it's something that'll pass with time. And maybe it's something I have to deal with. She's driving around without a car seat. She's driving around and she doesn't buckle the kids. She goes beyond the speed limit. She's drinking and driving. There are issues I can't, you know, you can't turn a blind eye. You got to deal with it.
Last week was the best, though. The guy who lived with the woman who set the house on fire 3 times. I mean, he's sleeping with his clothes now, probably. Remember, he put a little hot ash in the garbage.
But that one's a true story. That was a true story.
That's amazing. I thought about that 3 times.
What's the alternative? You know,
a hard night and a day. You can't even sleep in peace. You could have been smoking the whole house.
Yeah, but but most marriages, I would say all marriages, have serious issues. You know, everyone comes up and says, how could you live with this? They're right. Every marriage has their issues of how could you live with this?
They're responsible for more divorces, by the way, than anything else. The people who come up to the other spouse and say, how could you live with this?
Right. That's true. Oh, I wasn't going to discuss that here. Okay, that's a whole separate issue. What I call the snakes of a marriage. At any rate, coming back to our point. So, number one is try to find another way. If you've spent time thinking about it and you decide there's no other way, okay, how am I going to do this? So you think it through in your mind and you're going to have to do some homework and prepare for the conversation. The conversation should be when you're permitted, not when you're prohibited, not when you guys can't touch, not when she's in the nida state and so the couple is prohibited. No, you wait until the time when you're permitted. And the conversation should take place when things are the closest, not when things are exploding and there's fireworks. You wait until an opportunity when things are calm and you're having a nice conversation and you've expressed appreciation. I always say you have no right to express criticism unless you've expressed 25 times the appreciation. For every one word of criticism, there have to be 25 words of appreciation. Have you shown an appreciation? Usually not. So don't go criticizing. So you got to prepare. Find all those things you should be showing appreciation for and show that appreciation. Now, you're having a nice conversation, and in the conversation, you find a way to mention one example. Now, if you're going to do what men often want to do, and that is show up with a list, so you be prepared. Her answer is going to be, "You're right. That's the type of person I am. I feel very bad for you. You married a liar." Finished. Yeah, you lost. It's over. Now what? So you're not looking to prove she's a liar. You're not looking to prove your point. You're looking to think with her. So if you want to think with her, then you have to find the right setting, a positive setting, and you take something and you take one example that's going to illustrate the point. And you say, you know, last week when there was the story of the PTA, don't mention the gas. Don't mention to her that, you know, I spent the morning stranded and then that night you did the same thing. And no, take one example. You remember the story with the PTA? So I was just wondering, you know, I would feel more comfortable if maybe we could find a way to work on having a better understanding between us that, you know, when, you know, you find your way of saying it. And what you have to have next is a discussion of what your expectations are. And very often we have these unfair expectations. So tomorrow I expect it to be over. It's not going to happen. The next thing is that you have to be prepared with things that you know really irritate her. Meaning, it's very easy to sit on the sidelines as a judge and tell her, you know, I expect you to work on this. This is really something, a character flaw that's really problematic. And in order for the marriage to go right, you're going to really have to work on this. That's ridiculous. We each have character flaws. If you want her to work on something, then it's very recommended that in the conversation you can even begin by saying, look, I think we each have things that would be beneficial if we worked on in the course of the next month or two. What do you think are things I should work on? And you have to take something that's equally hard as hers that you're going to work on. So you might say, no, she's telling me I have to daven three times a day at Minyan and be on time? Come on, that's not fair. Okay, wait a second. If you're going to ask her for something, you have to take something that's equally hard for you, whatever that might be. And then you also have to have prepared a few angles of how she can work on it. So, for example, if we're talking about lying, so one of the things you have to know is that whenever we're working to change our speech habits, our habits of conversational style, so then the first thing that happens is a person makes a mistake and learns to correct himself after he made the mistake. I don't think it's possible for a person to switch around 180 degrees. What a person can do is decide, I want to work on this, and then the person is going to reach a point where he can at least correct himself after he said it. After two or three times that he does that, he'll be able to correct himself mid-sentence. And only after that can he reach the point where he can catch himself before he says what he doesn't want to say. So if you're going to come and discuss with someone changing a habit or changing a characteristic, you have to come with a few options of how to work on it. You can't just come and say, this is a problem, go work on it. You have to think it through, do your research, and come with some viable options. You know, I was wondering if maybe we could work on it this way, maybe we could work on it that way. You come with a few options, and she might nix all of them. Now, you're going to work at the same time as she's going to work on something that's equally hard. Chances are, you will not succeed. And that's important. Because usually we underestimate how hard it is to change a habit. So if we're not working on something simultaneously, what happens is we look at her and we say, why aren't you changing yet? But if we're working on something simultaneously, then we see that we're not changing, so then it's much easier to understand why she's not changing. And the final point, which is so important, and people usually forget it, is that when you see the slightest improvement, you have to praise it and show your appreciation. What we usually do is the exact opposite. The other side makes a slight improvement, and we're so frustrated that they haven't resolved the whole issue that we show them how it's not perfect. We come and say, yeah, it's very nice that you corrected yourself an hour later by the time that really, you know, I almost did this, I almost did that. Why'd you say it in the first place? And it's the exact opposite. If you want to give them the strength to succeed, what you have to do is show tremendous appreciation for every little step forward, because the truth is that every little step is hard. It's very hard. And most people don't succeed in changing one iota. Now, you guys are the exception, by the way. And that's why you might have big expectations, but you have to realize the way the rest of the world is. Most people don't change in their life, and it's very hard to change.
Habits. It's quite easy to put this thing or expect.
Nahum's waiting, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It sounds like when you say to do all these things, encouragement, this and that, talk to the gym, it sounds like you're talking to a kid.
Ask yourself, wouldn't you want to be spoken to this way?
Like a kid?
It doesn't have to be like a kid. Appreciation isn't only for a kid. You know, every one of us wants to hear we're doing great. Imagine you walk out of this class and someone says to you, Nachum, you know, you ask really great questions. It strengthens the whole class. When you're not there, the class looks different. You feel good about yourself. You feel happy. Everyone needs appreciation. We all need positive feedback. I don't think it's like a kid. I think that you could do it like a kid. You could be condescending when you show appreciation. Good for you! Okay, so that's not the idea. I think that mature adults can give mature adult appreciation, yes. Yes?
I was going to ask something along a similar line. They say, how do you make it that when you want to appreciate someone's improvement, like slight improvement, whatever, that you do it in a way that it might not sound phony, it will be real, you know?
This depends on the person, but I think a person can say, look, I'll make up a name for your wife. Choose a name.
No.
Okay, Esti.
Shoshana.
Okay. I want you to know that I know you've been working on this, and I really appreciate it. I know you're making headway, and it's not easy, and I appreciate every step of the way. I want you to know I appreciate it. That's a simple, easy way. And sometimes you could leave it in the form of a note, sometimes in the form of a letter. But you have to see which style fits for you and your wife. It has to be real. We're not talking about playing a game here. We're talking about having that real appreciation and expressing it. Okay. So what did we see today? We discussed criticism is the destruction of marriage. Intrinsic to criticism is the message. It was more important for me to get this point across than not to hurt your feelings. The issue is you. You are the problem. I'm okay. We said we avoid criticism. We try to get the message across positively. We said one of the ways to get it across positively is find opportunities to compliment what's good. Another way is sometimes to discuss a story where everything's right, and through that story, basically get the message across subtly and gently that this is something we appreciate. We then went on to discuss in circumstances where we would have to criticize, stop and don't criticize, try to find a way to get it right. And if you've come to the conclusion after giving it much thought that you have to criticize, so then ask yourself, is this really something that has to change? Or maybe I could learn to live with this, even though it's wrong. Maybe I'm going to be able to live with this and it's not such a big deal afterwards. After all. And if after all that you've decided the right thing is to criticize, you wait for a time that the couple, you and your wife, are in a permissive state, you wait for a time where things are warm, and then you mention it as a one-time occurrence. When you mention it, you have to have something that you're willing to work on yourself of that's equally hard. You work on it together. You have to come with a few options of how a person can work on it. And you have to show tremendous appreciation for every step of the way, every little bit of achievement, of accomplishment, and be prepared for the fact that there are ups and downs, and people don't switch overnight. People usually don't change their habits altogether. And if they're going to make some change, you have to be able to show tremendous appreciation for the little accomplishment that's been accomplished, and that'll give strength for further accomplishment.